Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Back with me for third time? Fourth time?
I believe it's the fourth time. Technically the third, but it's now the fourth episode.
Fourth episode. There he is, Aaron Alvarado.
Hey, David. What's going on, buddy?
Oh, you know what? I just finished watching Revenge of the Sith, so that's what's been going on.
Yeah. So you had a great day, is what you're telling me.
So my day's been terrific.
Can we just start off by saying that's the greatest scene in the entire prequel trilogy?
Oh.
The Frankenstein's monster busting the shackles off and then screaming of no.
Oh, yeah. I love the dude, whoever was in the suit, because we know it wasn't David Prowse or whatever the guy's name from the original trilogy, because the dude does this walk after he breaks out of the shackles. That's like this like really weird stumble before he stands up, chest out, and just does the no.
Oh, yeah. I can just imagine Lucas yelling direction at the actor. Okay, give me something more stunted, more Frankenstein's monster-like. That's it.
That's it. You nailed it, man. You nailed it. I kind of wish that James Earl Jones, as a part of the agreement to do the voice again, if he was like, yeah, I got to be in the suit this time.
Would have instantly made the movie better, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You got to think he saw that and was like, ah, that should have been me in there.
Sorry to just spoil the
well, there's our review of Revenge of the Sith. I was gonna say, though, with these lists, I've written pros and cons down, and yes, the cons have been traditionally longer than the pros for these prequel movies. And yes, it's true. Attack of the Clones literally had zero pros. This one, like, there's nothing there. I'm sorry. I mean,
you didn't like Yoda doing 23 backflips.
No. You know what? Okay. I didn't. And you know what? They gave Yoda a second chance in Revenge of the Sith. You know what? By the way, he's 0-2 in lightsaber battles. So. Can my man Yoda win one lightsaber battle? Like, if this guy's supposed to be the most powerful Jedi, like, maybe just one battle? Like, one.
Yeah, no kidding. And you know what? Just to touch on that for a second. If he's one of the most powerful Jedi ever, why does he need a lightsaber?
Yeah.
Isn't he, like, just almost one with the Force at this point?
Shouldn't he be able to just shoot lightning bolts out? Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. You would think, right?
Oh, my gosh. It's like... I wanted him to just jump in there, shoot the lightning bolts out, and be like, I'm going to add like 10 more years to what Mace Windu already given you, Emperor Palpatine. Because you're like, he like electrocuted you to about like age late 60s, early 70s, and I'm going to bring you to the 90s, you know, like, but no, it didn't work out that way.
What was that force power, by the way, that causes you to age like that Mace Windu had? Because I've never seen that in any other film.
It was literally his blocking his
yes, that's right,
with the lightsaber, that's, and it just shot back, and instead of, like, you know, stopping his heart or just killing him, it just aged him. It was the seminal scene, by the way, of Mace Windu, who, by the way, for all intents and purposes, had Darth Sidious, Emperor Palpatine, whatever you want to call him, had him dead to rights, right?
Oh, yeah.
Had him dead to rights. But Anakin had to come in and just be like, you know, I haven't cared about the Jedi Order at all up to this point, but now is the point where I'm going to say we shouldn't murder somebody because we're Jedi.
Never mind all those sand people that he killed, that he mowed down.
Just
in a fit of rage.
Completely mowed down.
Yeah.
And you know what's... that's actually one thing I wrote in my notes is during that scene. how quickly Anakin says these are two lines he says back to back. And mind you, there is only a few seconds between these two lines. And the two lines are, let me pull this up. This is so ridiculous. Okay, quote, "What have I done?" Pause for a second as Emperor Palpatine asks him to be his apprentice, and he says, "I will do whatever you ask." I mean, we're talking Anakin switch to the dark side being a 10-second transition. Like, oh my gosh, what have I done? Mace Windu just got just axed, and you're clearly the bad guy, and I will do whatever you want. I'm going to do anything. Oh, you want me to murder a bunch of children, the younglings? Point me in the direction I need to go. Ready to go. If you want to give me one of those double-sided lightsabers, I can do it twice as fast.
What the heck? Yeah, that was a tad unbelievable, but, you know, whatever. I mean, yeah, it had to happen. And, of course, leave it to Lucas's writing. Let's just do it the worst possible way. So at least he's consistent with that. So,
yeah, you've got to admire his consistently terrible scripts.
Well, yeah, clearly. Oh, I mean, he's the master of that.
Now, I started off pretty negative here, as I have with these prequels. I mentioned to you before recording, I think, that this is, to me, is clearly the best of the prequel trilogies. Like, actually,
right.
You have the three. It's clearly the best. Now, obviously, it's not saying much considering Attack of the Clones is one of the worst films ever made.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there.
So. Yeah, it's really, really bad. It's not saying a lot, but this is how thirsty we were. Like, okay, let's rewind this a little bit. Attack of the Clones is the 42nd highest grossing film of all time right now. 42.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Wait, did I say Attack of the Clones? I meant Revenge of the Sith. Who knows where Attack of the Clones is?
Attack of the Clones?
It's probably in the 50s.
Oh, wow.
But Revenge of
the Sith. See, I was going to say 11, so.
Yeah. Well, this is like, okay. I'm fascinated, and I've said this in the past, with the psychology of the way people have consumed the prequels, both when they came out and now, right? They're obviously laughed about much more now than when they came out. Mm-hmm. It took the general public several years to admit The Phantom Menace was bad, right?
Right.
That's I mean, and we're talking real movie critics that it took them a while to, like, finally realize, like, people wanted these so bad, right? Like,
I want to say it was Roger Ebert gave Revenge of the Sith 3.5 stars.
Yes, he did.
I think that was, I mean, Ebert, really?
Yeah.
Revenge of the Sith? Yeah, I don't know, man. So, yeah, I think we were in a collective, like, I feel like we were all drunk. We were all Star Wars drunk.
We were Star Wars
drunk. And we had these Star Wars beer goggles on. And anything they put in front of us, we just, I don't know, we loved it. I don't understand.
Well, this is the thing. No, you're 100% right. Everything you're saying is 100% correct. And because Attack of the Clones was so bad, and look, maybe this was a part of Lucas's strategy, but Attack of the Clones was so bad that Revenge of the Sith comes out, and because it's clearly the best one, we prop it up to be as if it's as good as Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, Star Wars. Like, it's insane, Aaron. It's 80% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Is it really?
80.
That's mind-blowing.
That's mind-blowing
because it's a terrible movie, first of all.
It's not good.
If we can take a step back, it's an awful movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really bad. But like you said, compared to what came before it, I guess it wasn't so bad. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. So it's 80%. It has technically 202 fresh and 51 rotten of the critics.
That is incredible.
Incredible. I mean, okay, we're talking... So we're talking Richard Corliss, Time Magazine, big-time critic. Quote, "A grave and vigorous popular entertainment, a picture that regains and sustains the filmic force Lucas dreamed up a long time ago in a movie industry that seems far, far away." Woof.
That's high praise for a terrible movie.
So
I'd actually, you know, do you ever read Armand White? by any chance?
No, the guy.
He's one of the first guys that hated the last Toy Story movie. You know, like that movie is universally thought of as like the greatest Pixar movie of whatever.
Yeah.
Armand White, it came out. He was famous for just having a scathing review of it. Ooh. And he's a contrarian, first of all. So if a movie is popular and loved, he comes out and says it's terrible.
Oh,
and
no.
Which is, that's kind of a shtick. So it's entertaining.
Okay.
I wonder what he said about the Star Wars movies, because I'm guessing he was probably one of the very few dissenting voices. And now looking back, he was probably right about everything.
Is he upset?
So I got to go back sometime.
Is he upset now that he ended up being right? Does he wish he could walk back?
Well, he's upset about everything. That's just kind of his personality. Okay. But that's kind of his appeal for me personally.
So some of the people, and I don't know what the criteria is to be considered one of the critics to be factored into the Rotten Tomato score, because some of these aren't websites I've heard of. But I still feel like these people need to be called out publicly in a very public way.
Right.
For example, Felix Vasquez Jr. out of Cinema Crazed, who is counted into the Rotten Tomato score, said, quote, "As the finale approached, I just didn't want to leave my seat because that meant it's all over." Felix.
Wow.
Felix.
Wow.
You have an open invitation to join us on this podcast and walk those comments back. Okay. The Urban Cinephile Critics Association, which sounds like a very, very politically correct
critics group,
says Lucas, quote, "Lucas slips up on a few fronts en route, but doesn't disappoint when it counts." Okay.
Wow.
Well, when did it count for you? Because
I think when the toys came out, that's what he's talking about.
Oh,
because they did have some really cool toys. Let's be honest.
And with the Princeton Town topics, Mr. Cam Williams said, quote, "A fitting capstone on a collection of screen classics for the ages." Like, Cam, you are, consider this a public rebuke. Like, you are not allowed to do this. Now, this is, this one hurts me. There's a website I like to visit. Like, there's a handful of websites I visit every day.
Mm-hmm.
One of the movie sites I visit is darkhorizons.com.
Okay.
He's one of, like,
been
the original
forever.
Dark Horizons is, like, one of the original, like, movie blogging, kind of in the vein of Ain't It Cool News.
Mm-hmm.
It's this dude in Australia named Garth Franklin. Darkhorizons.com. It's, like, kind of a one-man operation. I follow him on Twitter, read all of his stuff. He just kind of posts stuff as news is reported, and so it's just really good, just kind of a, almost like it's almost like a movie. I wouldn't call it like a movie subreddit necessarily, but it'd be like a movie news subreddit is essentially what his site would be like, and it's a lot of links, and it's very helpful. But he's on here, man, with a positive review that they count. Garth Franklin, quote, "The only one of the trilogy that actually works as good as both a good summer movie and a solid sci-fi movie in its own right."
Like, ooh, wow.
I appreciate this dude's opinions. I actually think he's pretty smart. Mm-hmm. And when he does, he mostly posts links, but occasionally he does his own reviews. And I think, you know, he's right a lot of the time. I don't agree with everything, obviously, but like, even he was tricked. Like, we had been delivered crap. Pile of crap in 1999 with Phantom Menace, and a pile of crap with Attack of the Clones, and then a pile of slightly less crap with Revenge of the Sith.
Right.
Like, it was just like not as much crap, and it was like, oh my gosh.
It was finally in a sandwich form, so it had bread around it. So we're like, yes, finally.
Yeah.
Some relief.
Seriously. Oh, it's
yeah,
it's
so at the time, I remember, you know, I was a little bit older than you were, but I was swept up in the fervor, man. I wasn't immune.
Oh, yeah.
And to be honest, I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan out there, but there was a wave that just swept over the entire country when it happened. So I absolutely got caught up in it, and I feel like it, I went under and I lost oxygen and my brain stopped working, and for some reason I liked the prequels at the time. Upon further review, they're really bad movies. I mean, they're laughable, quite honestly. You just watch them and you just shake your head like, what were they thinking? how did this make it in the final cut? Like, there's so many moments that go throughout the entire series of the prequels. It's just like, this is embarrassing.
Yeah.
Why would you want to put your name on this? I don't understand. But, you know, people loved them.
Yes, they did.
I loved them. So, I'm not immune.
Look, dude, I can't help myself, man, with these reviews. I know you weren't immune. I wasn't immune. I enjoyed Revenge of the Sith the first time I saw it because it was a pile of slightly less crap. Okay.
Yeah, of course. It was the darkest of the three, right? Isn't that the thing that we fed?
The one and only PG-13 of the Star Wars films. Yeah.
Didn't need to be. There was no reason for that to be PG-13. No. I don't understand how it was any more violent or no.
It was Anakin controversial burning on Mustafar is what it was.
Okay.
That's what it was. You know, Mark Dudgesick from Mark Reviews Movies. By the way, that sounds like a personal blog. Sounds like someone who should not be having his review counted into the Rotten Tomatoes.
What's the daily traffic on that? How many unique visitors is that website getting?
Mark Reviews Movies? I don't know. Could you imagine if I had a David Reviews Movies website and it was counted in the Rotten Tomatoes score? I'd actually quite like that.
I'm surprised that your MySpace review isn't on there.
Well, if I did have a website, a personal blog that reviewed movies, I would be like the sole positive review of Tomorrowland. So,
smart.
I'm sure someone would revoke my license because I still think that was a good movie.
Well, you'd end up on the box. That's the thing.
That's what I'm saying, dude. The best Tomorrowland, the best movie since Saving Private Ryan. but this case, so this Mark reviews movies, man. Again, he's counted in the Rotten Tomatoes score. He says, quote, a great Star Wars film and, dare I say, a great film unto itself. He dared to say that this was a great film in a vacuum.
He dared to say it.
Oh, my gosh.
Ooh. I'd love to see what the standards of these critics are. Like, what other movies do they consider great? I just don't... I can't imagine anything that's not Star Wars related. They're probably just... they just eviscerate if it's not perfect. But somehow, once you introduce that Star Wars opening scroll, the brain just shuts off.
It shuts off. And the standards just fall. It shuts off and it accepts whatever is delivered. I'm going to read two more and I'm going to stop myself because I can't handle it. There are people in Rotten Tomatoes right now telling me that this is the best Star Wars film since Empire Strikes Back. Okay. They are saying this is better than Return of the Jedi and I can't handle that. Like, I can't handle it. My brain can't handle it. I cannot handle it. But these are the last two. Mark R. Leeper from, oh my gosh, how do these people have websites? rec.arts.movies.reviews. Okay. So apparently, Rotten Tomatoes is allowing anybody in. I swear I'm not reading the user comments. I'm reading the legitimate reviews posted. Okay. He gives it a 9 out of 10, of course. In years to come, this is quote, in years to come, George Lucas's farewell to his Star Wars series. I can't even read it. I can't even finish reading this. let me compose myself before I finish what he says. I'm going to
take a knee and then just.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Quote, in years to come, George Lucas's farewell to his Star Wars series may be considered his finest entry.
Okay. Wow.
Okay.
Heavy words.
Oh my gosh. In the second one, this is too much. This is the best way to make someone go absolutely crazy. You know what? No, I'm not even going to read it. I can't read it.
I'm going to look it up and I'm going to be, I'm just going to be shocked at all the praise heaped on
people,
this thing.
People,
you know what's,
yeah.
When did this movie come out, by the way? What was the release date on this?
2005.
Okay. So we're a decade out at this point.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you, 10 years ago, I wrote stuff on the internet that I'm absolutely embarrassed that I put out there. No, so I can kind of understand where these...
No, I mean, how can I judge right now? My MySpace profile picture at this moment in 2005, as I'm right about to leave for a Mormon mission, is I got like a gray hoodie up. I'm thinking I've got a profile of my face, right?
Uh-huh.
And I'm full emo. I've gone full emo at this point. Full EMO. Okay. So like I shouldn't be casting stones.
Right.
But
but you know where we can't forgive them? These were probably adults that wrote these things.
Probably.
You know. Yeah.
Okay, this is my challenge, actually. To anyone listening to this podcast, when you have a free minute, maybe on your lunch break at work, in between classes, wherever you might be, I would like you to look up Rotten Tomatoes on RottenTomatoes.com. Look up Revenge of the Sith. I want you to copy the words in these little snippets, okay? I want you to email these people, and I want you to ask the question, do you still feel this way about Revenge of the Sith? Paste the snippet, and report back with the reply, okay? I want to know if some of these people will walk back these comments, if they'll be like, look, I was a little overzealous. I got excited because the platter had slightly less crap on it, and I mistook that for being better than Return of the Jedi. It's been 10 years later. I've seen it a bunch more times. I've been able to think about it, and I was wrong. I was wrong, and I'm sorry. I would be amazed if people reply with, no, I still feel that way. I really would be. Email these people. I need our brave little army of brave little listeners to email these people, okay? And if they do say sorry, okay, the follow-up email that I would like you to send is, will you update your Rotten Tomatoes Rotten Tomatoes review, okay? Because what I want this podcast to have the power to do is I want us to have the power to bring Revenge of the Sith to Rotten, okay? If we can get enough people can we not do this? Can we not do this?
I think that you have the power with this show to really make a difference. And if there's one thing that you can change, it should be that positive score on Rotten Tomatoes. You know, if I were one of these reviewers that were quoted on there and someone came back and emailed me and said, do you recant these feelings you had?
Yeah.
Personally, I would dig in my heels and I would double down. I would say not only is it the best prequel, it's literally the best Star Wars film ever made. And I would say that the only thing that was wrong with the movie is General Grievous wasn't in it for longer. I mean, there should have been more scenes with General Grievous. And less explanation of who he is. What makes him so dangerous? Anything about his backstory?
Are you talking about Grievous or Dooku?
Exactly.
Because look, if people reply back, if these reviewers reply back with hashtag needs more Dooku, because I will say this about the great Christopher Lee, and I mean that Christopher Lee is great. He becomes the seminal character, or this like total like unbeatable Count Dooku at the end of Attack of the Clones that not even Yoda himself can defeat in a lightsaber fight.
Right.
To merely be beheaded in the first 10 minutes of Revenge of the Sith. And the dude is just head cut off. Yeah. No question about it. Right.
Not much of a fight. Really a whimper. He goes out. Oh,
he went out with a whimper. All right. But yet General Grievous, this really weird droid that must have been programmed with a slightly higher intelligence.
He was a robot. He was the only robot with tuberculosis is what he was. I didn't understand that. Why does he was a lunger. I didn't understand.
But
why?
George Lucas was like, I know it's a droid, but any chance to teach the kids about emphysema, why not?
Well, I think he had just seen the movie Tombstone, and he really loved the Doc Holliday character. He's like, I got to get something like that in my film.
Oh, General Grievous being his Doc Holliday.
You know, what really just bugs me about Grievous was he had the opportunity to be this amazing bad guy. Okay,
sure.
So he's a Jedi killer.
Yeah.
He's really super powerful, ruthless, an evil, evil bastard, if you will. But, I mean... he goes out with a whimper. Let's be honest. It wasn't that good of a fight.
No.
So, I don't know, man.
Not good at all. The bad guys in this movie were like Dooku, Grievous, and then Emperor Palpatine himself, which, look, we've had a history with this guy. We know he's the Emperor. We know that he's probably the most powerful Jedi, even more powerful than Yoda, right? And he almost got killed by Samuel L. Jackson.
Right, exactly.
Like, he almost got killed by Samuel L. Jackson. Like, that's what happened. So, I mean, for all intents and purposes, he lost that battle to him and, you know, and was able to have a total mulligan with Anakin coming in to save him. So these bad guys were not good. Now, of course, this got negative super fast. A couple positive things about this movie. It did spawn two of my favorite memes, which we've already talked about, the Vader no.
No.
And then one,
it's probably the greatest line delivery in any of the sequels or prequels.
I hope that James Earl Jones did that on the same microphone that I'm like, just like a Blue Yeti, like via Skype or something.
No, I feel like he just yelled it into his iPhone, the recording app.
It's like, if you can
just send it in, he emailed it into Lucas. Here you go, George.
He's like, yeah, if you're not gonna allow me in the suit, I'm not coming in the studio. And then the second meme is the "You Are the Chosen One" meme with Obi-Wan Kenobi,
yeah,
which is used quite a bit in sports when there's a fumbling quarterback that has been propped up on a pedestal way too high, way higher than they deserved, and then they have they throw a couple pick sixes, and then immediate "You Are the Chosen One" gifts just galore.
AKA Andrew Luck, let's be honest. Yes,
totally. RG3 already went through that, poor guy. He was RG3 was the second coming for those people in DC, and whew.
Oh yeah, as a Cowboys fan, we had to play that guy twice in his rookie season, and I dreaded those games,
wasn't it?
Because he was unstoppable for 10 months. He was unstoppable. And then ever since that playoff game, I mean, poor guy, I actually feel bad for him.
You know who else was unstoppable for 10 months? Colin Kaepernick. Yeah. And then very stoppable, turns out. Very stoppable.
Well, have you seen the guy's muscles? Because he loves to just show them off.
I've seen his Beats commercials. Does that count? Oh, gosh. It is a rough time to be a Niner fan. Rough. Anyway, so the "You Are the Chosen One" meme I like quite a bit. I will say the movie starts off with like a pretty cool like galactic battle, and like it starts off on the right note, and maybe that's what blinded people. Maybe that's why it has an 80%, because it starts off with a really cool scene. And I wish the movie could have held that that quality. There is more, like the per capita of, or like the per minute, I guess, I should call it the PER, of lightsaber battles and space, like, you know, ships fighting, whatever you want to call it, highest in this film than any other of the Star Wars films. It's constant.
Oh, yeah, by far.
Constant, yeah.
So, yeah, about that open, I mean, what I appreciate is the fact that Lucas just abandoned all pretense of, I'm going to give you a story here. Yeah. I'm just going to give you action right off the bat for about 30 minutes. It's balls to the walls.
Yep.
There's the awesome spaceship battle where we see R2-D2. He's part of the ship and getting attacked by these robots, whatever. That stuff's really cool. Then they get inside one of the other ships, and there's like lightsaber battles. And, you know, for 30 full minutes, you're getting nonstop action, which is, on some level, it really worked.
Totally.
But yeah, like you said, it tails off after that.
Yeah.
It really does. So.
Yeah. This is where it ended with me on the beheading of Dooku. And that's when it snapped back to reality for me. Because I popped this movie in with the intent of being like, okay, I really do want to give it as much of a fair shake as I can. And it starts, and I'm like, for some reason, I don't remember it starting that positively. Like, I don't actually remember it. And so when it started, I was like, oh, no, this is cool. In fact, you have a dude that gets blasted. Some one of the good guys gets blasted, and you see the dude's body flying in space as they fly by him. It was kind of a cool effect. It's we haven't seen that in Star Wars yet. When we see these people, you know, the stay on target, and then all you see is kind of fire in his cockpit, and then you just see his thing explode. That's the extent.
That was
pretty
awesome.
So seeing a dude like get blasted out and then see his body kind of in space was a really interesting effect. And yeah, it was just super fast paced. And then when they barely make it into the hangar with the closing door, you see Obi-Wan Kenobi just He launches out of the cockpit, and this is the type of things kids dream up when they're playing with, like, their micro machines, is the idea before his ship even lands, his cockpit opens up, he jumps out with lightsaber unsheathed, you know, and is beheading these droid robots, right? And it's, like, in a really smooth, one quick, like, one motion, kind of one fell swoop. And it was really Jedi-like, like, almost like this grace to it. That was like, wow, this is really cool. By the time we get to the Dooku scene, that's when it spells trouble.
You see that once the real weak point is the dialogue. Anytime there's any sort of dialogue or character interaction that doesn't involve lightsabers, it really struggles. It grinds to a halt. And what I liked about the very intro, the very beginning intro, that it felt like a video game. So I'm a huge video game fan. Yeah, and this was just like, awesome. This is like really cool video game intro. You know, there's lightsabers, there's laser beams, and there, like you said, the scene where they land and he flips out of the ship, that was legitimately awesome. Like, that was a fun little scene that they had there. And the whole communicating with R2 just harkens back to, what is that, Empire Strikes Back, when he's trying to, when the trash compactor, that scene.
That's so in Star Wars, but yeah.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. So I haven't seen the originals in a long time.
Yeah.
But
I'm glad
so
I brought on a Star
Wars
expert. It
kind of harkens back to that. Exactly. It's a good choice. So the first 30 minutes totally work for me. And I think that it's fun. It's immersive. You feel like, wow, this is the Star Wars universe that I was hoping to see when I first heard about the prequels. This is the kind of stuff I wanted to see.
Yeah.
It hits a wall. And like you said, I think that Dooku scene is a touchstone that you can really point to and say, where are we going from here?
Yeah, where are we? Yeah, no, it's true.
Where are you taking us, George?
Yeah, that's the on the brakes moment. It makes me wonder how the rewrites go for this, because, you know, Lucas is credited with writing all of these, and I think there's a co-writer on all of them as well. But if they handed off the opening sequence and he's like, hey, I don't have time for this. Someone want to just rewrite this and do this? And someone just does this killer stuff for the intro, right?
Yeah.
And they get to the Dooku, and then that's where George Lucas is handed the reins back or something, right? Because it's just
I feel like he's sitting at a desk. He cracks his knuckles and he says, "I got it from here, boys."
Are we at Dooku's death yet? Okay, I got this. I got this. Off with his head.
But I feel like they totally made it a point to say we have to start this last prequel episode off correctly.
Yeah.
So we have to start off with a bang. So let's pour everything we have into this first opening scene, and we're going to knock their socks off, basically. And they did. I think it really worked.
I agree. Great intro. There were a couple other things. I mean, I think the anticipation for this episode especially was high, because this whole time there's just the foreshadowing. We know that Anakin is going to go to the dark side. We know he's going to don the Vader helmet. We know that's happening, and this is finally the episode where he actually is convinced and changes to the dark side. One of the reasons why I joke that it's funny that he switches in 10 seconds.
Right.
But, I mean, obviously it's this thing that's been, you know, I realize it's longer than 10 seconds because he's super emotional, I guess, which makes him not a great Jedi.
Doesn't feel much longer than 10 seconds.
No, it doesn't. It's a pretty quick transition. I watched the trailer as well for this movie because I was curious how much they show. Now, there's no spoiler, obviously, that Anakin's turning into Darth Vader. We all know that's happening. But the difference between watching that trailer, which they show in the trailer the Vader suit at the very end when he's standing on the bridge of a
the
Star
table.
Destroyer.
Yeah. Oh, and, okay, yeah, yeah, right.
And they don't need to show that. Like, that's what we're waiting to see. That's what we want to see, right? We know what's going to happen, right? You don't need to show that in the trailer. And that's the difference between J.J. Abrams' most recent trailer, which was brilliant and told us nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if you saw it.
I sure did.
I'm not sure how you couldn't see it.
Right, exactly.
But it was just crazy to me. Like, that's the one thing that you know we all want to see, and you just threw it in the trailer, which is so bizarre. We're waiting for this foreshadowing. There's a key scene in the film that Anakin has with the Chancellor, right? And that's the whole scene where he's like, can I learn the powers to, you know, bring people back from death or whatever? You know, where can I learn these powers? Or can I learn these powers? And then the Chancellor mm-hmm. turns from him and does the whole, not from a Jedi. which is my best.
Dana, I think that was the sound in the background.
Yeah, yeah. That's the best Ian McDermott impression you're going to get from me. as much as
solid.
I would love to do the whole scene with Mace Windu where he's like, no. anyway. This is going to sound silly and ridiculous, and it is. I couldn't help but watch the show that they were participating in. It was like a Cirque du Soleil with bubbles. which reminded me, of all the things that they have, like, in this world, in this galaxy far, far away, like, their entertainment, not great. We've got pod racing and we've got these bubbles. Like, that's it. That's all we've seen. Like,
well, they also have that arena where they feed the Jedis to the lions.
Right? Oh, that's right.
as if there weren't enough illusions from Christianity and the Force, let's create an arena where we throw Jedis to tigers. That's George Lucas subtlety for you.
A little on the nose.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd say so. No!
No! Anyway, a couple other things. One, I really wish they wouldn't have involved the Wookiee planet.
Yeah, are you kidding me? completely unnecessary.
It had nothing to do with anything. It could have been any planet, it could have been any people. But no, George Lucas is like, hey, here's an opportunity to give some backstory about who Chewbacca is, what planet he's from, and hey, let's throw in Chewbacca anyways, because everyone wants his backstory. You know, like, it was like, oh,
let's
no,
literally I... just put him in the background. Can we do that? You know what I was disappointed in when they went there? Is that there wasn't a young Han Solo on that planet meeting with Chewbacca for the first time.
I feel like, so there were rumors. I don't know if you remember this, but there were like rumors leading up to Revenge of the Sith that we were going to see a young Han Solo. And I was fully prepared going into this movie that we were going to see a young Han Solo. Mm-hmm. I feel like, I wonder a little bit if that's where people in the writing room drew the line finally and stood up to George Lucas. Like, look, we're right. This is the last movie. We're writing the script right now. Screw it. I'm going to stand up to him. Like, George, we got to take Han out. We can't do it. Like, we'll let you ruin Chewbacca, but we won't let you ruin Han. Like,
I feel like George just wanted to do like an offshoot movie with just kids starring in the roles.
Oh my gosh. Can we
just do baby Star Wars?
I would watch a movie about all those dead kid Jedis. I would watch that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, can we talk about that scene for a second? Oh, boy. Oh, that whole scene, it felt like Halloween. It was just like, here's little kids dressed like Jedi.
Yeah. No.
And now they're murdered.
Well, that's... How can you make a little kid dressed as a Jedi not look like Halloween night? I mean, like, that's what it is.
Exactly.
Right?
It was like, silly. It was pretty silly.
Like, I'll be honest. So for Halloween, I was Kylo Ren from the new Force Awakens, mm-hmm. which was great because most people had no idea who I was. And most adults, you know, it's like, hey, you like the Darth Vader guy? Kind of like the Darth Vader? Yeah, I'm Darth Vader. That's right.
Didn't know what the Kylo Ren costume was until I saw your pictures.
And really?
Well, at first, I thought you were like, a Jedi priest kind of thing or something. Because the sword is like a cross. I'm like, what is this?
No,
are you doing an exorcism?
That's what's amazing, too, is if I take the helmet off, I've got this medallion and these robes. And it's a monk costume at that point. I'm a monk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so like, I have a cross lightsaber. helmet. Yeah. I'm a monk. No, but like I don't blame people for not knowing who he is. I think that costume will probably be a lot more popular next year.
Give it time.
There were a couple kids that came up to our doorstep that had the Kylo Ren costume as well. In fact, my nephew, Parker, mm-hmm. was also Kylo Ren. So that was cool. But as Kylo Ren, my wife is a stormtrooper, which was amazing.
And we've got
this little Bluetooth TIE fighter speaker on. I mean, we were fully Star Wars this year. We've got this TIE Fighter Bluetooth speaker playing the Star Wars music as kids come up, you know. And I've got my lightsaber, great. You know. But every time a kid walked up and they were in the little Jedi costumes, a little bit of me was like, should I kill them? No, that's terrible. I walk that back. Unlike those Rotten Tomato reviewers, I will walk that back.
Never happening.
No, but seriously, like they walk up and I'm like, man, you could be plucked right from this Halloween night. Just drop the little plastic pumpkin bowl of candy and you could be put right into Revenge of the Sith and fit in that scene. Like,
yeah,
that's basically what those kids are wearing.
I know that scene was supposed to be powerful. Like here, he's fully turned to the dark side, but it really just felt silly to me.
It did feel silly. And I get it. I don't know if I weirdly try to give them credit for trying to go dark. Like I'm trying to give them credit for trying to do something that's pretty terrible. But
right. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, you're right. He's so dark. He's willing to kill children. Right. Which he did, but it was just like, it was silly. It felt like more like he stole their candy, right? Like that's what it felt like.
Exactly. What's interesting is, did he have to really use his lightsaber to kill them?
No.
Doesn't he have enough force power that he could just kill them?
No.
I mean,
he has enough force power to close their eyelids and not let them open.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. It just felt over the top. It's completely unnecessary. I personally would have liked to see him fight more like Jedi, actual like strong Jedis that were in the temple, like that would have been more exciting to me.
Yeah,
he just mowed through everybody, so it's kind of stupid. But
yeah, it's like, hey, nice job, Hotshot. Like,
yeah.
the scene was so silly, by the way, that I'm watching it tonight, and Lindsay comes into the room and sits down, and it's the scene where Obi-Wan and is it Yoda come across the kids all lying down?
Yeah,
you know, all day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Lindsay was like, "Oh, is it nap time in the Jedi Academy?" I was like, "Yep, yes, Lindsay, it's nap time." All those little bodies strewn about the floor, motionless, are just sleeping.
You know what's funny is when he killed the sand people, I felt that was a much stronger scene than when he killed the little kids. I totally agree.
Yeah. Because with the sand people, you're a little bit like, well, they don't know better.
Right. Exactly.
So I would have liked to have seen him fight some actual Jedi in the Jedi Temple. We eventually get that version of that, I guess all of that in the one battle on Mustafar with Obi-Wan Kenobi, which was a pretty good sabered fight scene.
For me, that was my favorite scene.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. The only problem I had with it was, for 2 hours before that scene, we were just nonstop action.
Yeah.
A whole lot of action sequences. So when we get to there, the fight feels really long. Like you feel every minute of that fight.
Yeah.
It's got to be at least a 15 to 20 minute sequence of them fighting.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah.
My question was, if Anakin is the one that was supposed to have all the ability to bring balance to the Force, how does he lose a fight to Obi-Wan?
That's what I'm saying, man. That's what I'm saying.
He seems completely underpowered. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't get it.
Well, ultimately, I think he wasn't the chosen one. I don't think he was the chosen one. Apparently, he was.
Okay.
I don't know.
But what about the midichlorians or whatever they're called?
Yeah, I think Qui-Gon's midichlorian counter was like defective that day.
It needed to be recalibrated. That was the problem.
Well, so that saber fight felt long, mostly because it was also flashing back and forth between Yoda fighting Emperor Palpatine and Obi-Wan fighting Anakin, right? I mean,
right,
and then
right.
You know. Anyway, so that's why it's going back and forth. And
right.
I actually like the scene where Obi-Wan's like, you were the chosen one. You were supposed to help destroy the Sith, not join them.
Right.
And then it flashes to this legless Anakin Skywalker.
Right. Yeah.
Looking up at him slowly sliding his motionless torso to the lava, right? Yeah, he looks at him and says, "I hate you." and it didn't land well. It wasn't like, I don't know. The way it was like, he's like, "I hate you." And it was like, everyone's like, "Are you serious? I'm the one guy here who can actually come up and help you. And really, that's what you're going to say. You're going to hate me. I raised you. I raised you. You hate me? I'm going to let you slide into the lava. Peace." You know?
Sure. And you know, for me, that felt like a stolen scene. That felt like Terminator 2 when they lowered Schwarzenegger into the molten vat. And again, much more powerful scene. "I'll be back."
Yeah.
"I hate you" is not, "I hate you" was just not the line that they needed right
there.
No,
it was really bizarre. It would have been way better. No lines at all.
Just
him just accepting what's about to happen. And that was seemingly a death, right? Like that's what it was.
Or I just came up with this. How about he falls into the lava and you just see his one hand. It's the middle finger.
Yeah.
Just as he falls into the lava.
Yeah.
That's a PG-13 rating right there. They would earn it at that point.
I think it's worth noting, as much as we poo on the prequels and as much as I love the the originals, that as good as their saber fight was, it does make their reunion fight in A New Hope lack a little luster.
Oh yeah, no kidding. That's the one thing about the original movies. Yeah. The saber fights, a little rudimentary.
Yeah.
Not as interesting.
It's true.
A lot of blocking in those. That's the thing.
A ton of blocking.
Let me just clash swords with you.
That's a ton of like what feels like sport fencing.
Exactly.
Do you have any insight
how they're going to handle that in the upcoming Star Wars, the saber fights?
I hope they go so much back to the originals that it's just a fencing practice again.
Be great. I don't know.
I've actually not read a lot about the saber fights, except that they've actually used a lot of the technology that have come out even since the prequels, with the companies that have made like legit lightsabers. I think they've actually used a lot of those, supposedly, for how they animate the saber and how they make the color how they have the color actually emanate off of the saber onto the people. They actually use colored sabers rather than just like green ones or white ones or whatever it is.
But to
just put it in post or whatever. That's all I know. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. One more negative thing worth mentioning, and it's with the script. I think I mentioned this especially in the Attack of the Clones episode that we did, how Yoda is done so terribly. I mean, they tried to do the puppet in Phantom Menace, and they ended up changing it after they released the movie. They went back and changed it for the DVD release to make him CGI like the second and third one.
I had no idea.
Oh, you didn't know? Yeah. So
now, what does the puppet Yoda look like?
Well, so we saw the puppet in Phantom Menace. When it came out, we all saw the puppet Yoda, just like the original trilogies, except it looked terrible, which was so bizarre because they had already done this right for Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. We have a good Yoda puppet. Why is this so hard to do? The technology should be better, not worse. And it looks so bad. And I think because they knew that the puppet, they couldn't have him actually do the lightsaber duel with Dooku, then in the second one, they decided to make him CGI. And so the second and third one CGI, and by the time they come out on DVD and VHS, they went back and also made him CGI in Phantom Menace. Yeah. And it's like terrible CGI. But anyway, the thing about Yoda is this. He's also the character that should be the easiest to write for. Like, he has a speaking, there's a convention to which he speaks. It should be very easy to write, and it should be very easy to avoid lines like, and I quote, "Not if anything to say about it, I have." which was this supposed to be this mic drop moment for Yoda when he walks in to confront Emperor Palpatine for the first time, uses the force push to just completely drop his guards, and then Emperor Palpatine says something to the effect of, "All the Jedi are dying. You're done." And here's the mic drop moment. And it's, "Not if anything to say about it, I have."
And, you know, I don't remember this, but I have a feeling that there was a round of applause when that happened.
Oh, my gosh.
I feel like there was an applause break.
So now's a good time
and
to
some people
up.
Yelling, ow!
Woo!
You tell him, Yoda, I do!
Now's a good time to bring up that this was 2005, and you and I worked at the movie theater at this time.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I saw a dry run of this film, meaning a couple days, 2 or 3 days before it came out to the public, I was able to see this film. So I don't think I actually got the crowd full of people until the opening day, which I think I went back and saw it again because I couldn't help myself. but do you have any memory of what it was like when it came out in theaters? Do you remember the crowds? Do you remember the lines? Do you remember anything?
So what I remember the most was Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
Like you said, I was working at the theater at the time, and the first chance that I got to see it was at IMAX after my morning shift had already finished. So I had 8 hours of dealing with these rabid Star Wars fans, you know, constant lines everywhere, nothing but complaints, stuff running out, and then... I get to go home. Actually, I didn't even have time to change. I just went straight from my job at the movie theater to the IMAX to watch Attack of the Clones. And I literally fell asleep about an hour in. I fell asleep an hour into Attack of the Clones, and I was snoring. Because I woke up. Yeah, I don't know how I woke up, but I woke up, and I just saw people looking at me. I was ruining the movie for people.
What they should have realized by then is George Lucas had already ruined the movie for them.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They should have followed my lead because I got a nice little nap in there.
They're like, this guy knows what's up. This guy, I'm into what he's doing.
Yeah, so the crowds were crazy. I think I don't remember seeing Attack of the Clones with a big audience.
Yeah,
I probably waited on that one just because I was so disappointed. I was just not disappointed with the first two. I was underwhelmed. I would say that I was underwhelmed with the first two, so I didn't need to see it opening weekend or anything like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a madhouse. Every day was a madhouse for weeks after those movies came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll say this. The Harry Potter crowds, quite a bit more civilized. Quite a bit more civilized.
Oh, yeah. The first big movie that I worked, I remember, was Spider-Man.
Oh,
the big first Spider-Man movie.
Wow.
And that was wild, man. Dude, there was a lot of people for that.
So
it was insane.
I didn't work there yet. I wasn't 16 yet, but I waited in line the first showtime with my brothers. And, dude, I remember that line. I remember that line specifically for whatever reason. Maybe it's because of all the people dressed up as Spider-Man. But, like...
Yeah, there certainly were.
Yeah, but it was insane. The lines were crazy for that first Spider-Man. And it's so funny that was one I remember almost more than anything else. I remember the Lord of the Rings lines as well quite a bit. A cast of characters in that one. Wow. So that was the first big movie you worked.
Yeah, Spider-Man was the first big one. And then, you know, I worked all the big ones for, you know, the next 3 years. Star Wars was bad. I mean, there was a lot of people.
Yeah.
Star Wars fans are annoying. I mean, I'll be honest. They're pretty pushy. Not very civilized. Someone swung a lightsaber at me because I wasn't filling their soda quickly enough or something.
Yeah. Well, the problem is I've found myself, I've become one. I've been a Star Wars fan for my life, my entire life. But I bought my tickets to the Cinemark XD Theater, okay? Essentially, every time I've seen one of these Star Wars special editions, re-releases, prequels, it's been at a Century or Cinemark. So I get tickets for the Cinemark XD Theater, and I buy 9 of them for family and friends. And I go in this week after work. I walk in to actually get the physical tickets so I can hand them out to the people that are even going with me, you know, so they can hold on to them themselves or whatever. Plus, you know, I think it's something people want to be able to hold their physical tickets, right? The guy's telling me he can't print them for me until the day of the showtime.
Oh, that no way.
First off, that's definitely not true, right? Like, it's not. That's no just way. Not true. This kid didn't know what he was doing, right? But I found myself beginning to get incensed over a very small thing like printing these tickets 2 months ahead of time. And I immediately found myself becoming like super entitled and being like, no, yeah, you're going to print my tickets right now. Like,
and then suddenly I had to, like, it all stop. Made sense why people were like that.
Well, what's funny is he grabs the microphone, his walkie talkie, and he immediately started, mm-hmm. and it was that moment that I had this weird flashback of like, kid who doesn't know what to do has to get on the walkie yeah. to message the manager about what to do with printing these tickets. And I like slowly uh-huh. backpedaled one step and I'm just like, what have I become? And then much like Anakin, I looked at him and I just said, I hate you.
You saw your reflection in the glass and you're like, no.
No. Yeah, but like I didn't even let him finish like figuring out. I like slowly stepped backwards. I turned around and I just left. Like mid, yeah, smart. Like unresolved. I just left
yeah.
like feeling pretty ashamed of myself that I started to put up a stink about this.
Right.
And it was just like, what am I doing? So disappointed in myself.
So how are you going to get the tickets? That's my question.
Going to wait till opening day like the kid told me.
Oh no!
There's no way I'm gonna go back.
You can't.
When
you can't do that.
No. I'm gonna go back when there's someone else working who knows what the heck they're doing. That's what I'm gonna do.
Not yeah. a young David Stauffer. Yeah, he was you. He was you 10 years ago.
That's what I'm saying. I look at him, and as soon as he grabs the walkie, not knowing what he's doing, I was like, I was this clueless guy getting on the walkie, you know, not sure. that long ago, and I hate what I've become. So anyway, look, I've talked on previous Star Wars pods about this cautious optimism that I have, but yet I've been burned. I know what it's like to have the hype level just reach epic proportions and then to be let down mm-hmm. in the worst way, right? But I've found myself right. allowing myself to get more and more hyped, right? And with this most recent trailer, I've decided to completely drop any level of guardedness. I've dropped any possibility that this movie could be bad. Because the end of this most recent trailer, you hear Carrie Fisher's voice say, the Force is calling for you. Just let it in. And I very much took that in the most literal way. Like, you know what? I'm just going to let it in. I'm just stop being cautiously optimistic. I'm just going to be optimistic. And I'm going full in. Halloween costume, Lego sets on my yeah. desk at work of an X-Wing and a TIE fighter.
Right.
I'm talking like
right.
I'm all in to the point that I'm listening to podcasts
mm-hmm.
about Star Wars. And there's one that I particularly like that's a website called makingstarwars.net. And they have mm-hmm. a podcast called Now This Is Podcasting, which is pretty hilarious. Yeah. A riff on pod racing. And I was listening today and I had a moment. It was like a snap back to reality moment where they took an email from a listener that asked them a question about the prequel trilogy. Now, the listener from, I think it was from England, essentially said something to the effect like, yeah, we all know the prequels were bad. And then spoke and asked his question as if knowing, you know, we're all on the same page here, they're bad. And then asked whatever question it was. I don't even remember what it was. It might have been something to do with the effect of, are you nervous that the new movie could let you down like the prequels let us down? But the dudes that I've been listening to the last four or five episodes of, they start going off like, whoa, what's wrong with the prequels? Like, what do you mean? What do you mean they're bad? And these are guys who otherwise have been very intelligent. I realize yeah. how like they're completely blind. Now they're huge fanatical Star Wars fan, but they start going, what do you mean? Like, going to give us come on, like, listener, give us some examples. Like, what do you mean they're bad? Like look. And then one guy jumps in and says, like, these weren't supposed to be the original trilogy. Like, these are exactly what George Lucas wanted to make. Like, these were the movies he was supposed to make and that he wanted to make. Like, what did you want? And they're doing yeah. this kind of roundtable discussion about how it's ridiculous that people hate the prequels. I'm driving at this point, and I'm in a state of mind now where I shouldn't be behind the wheel of a car. Because I'm like in full Vader no mode.
Right. Well, if you had a lightsaber, you'd kill some younglings.
Oh, yeah, dude.
That's how incensed you are.
Oh, my gosh. No, it's true. It is a good thing I was not near any Jedi academies because it would have been slaughter, genocide.
Well, you know, I feel like there's pushback. Okay, so like you said, the true fanatics.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they went in there with completely expecting to be blown away, and they were blown away. And then the people that were kind of on the fence or not as passionate had the chance to kind of step back and say, maybe those movies weren't so good. The fanatics clung to the original feelings. And so they probably never wavered from that fact that these movies weren't as good as we hoped they were. So,
yeah, that's a really interesting point. Because I think you're right. I think it's the fence, the people are on the fence that have been weirdly swayed by the pushback. But it was like, it's insane to me because they were saying things like, you know, this was a regal kind of gilded whatever society. Like it was supposed to look that way. Like that's how they wanted it to look, which addresses one of the concerns of the polished look of the prequels, right? But it was like when the guy was like, when he was saying in the podcast, like what this was what this these were like. This is what George Lucas set out to make. What else did you want? And I'm yelling. I'm like in the car, I'm yelling. How about a decent movie? How about like a decent movie? How about a script that's like okay?
Consistency.
Oh, God.
Sure. Exactly. How about some consistency? You know, let me just bring this one last point up about Revenge of the Sith.
Okay.
Okay. So answer me this question. The Jedi have these rules that they have to live by, correct?
Yeah, right. Right. Mace Windu was about to break that.
One of those. But,
yeah.
Exactly. So, well, my point is, once Anakin breaks bad, if you will, Obi-Wan says, "I got to go kill him." That's basically what he says.
Yeah.
Now I'm an assassin. Yeah. I'm not a Jedi anymore.
Yeah.
I got to go kill this guy. It's not I'm going to go save him. I just feel like, what's the point of him being a Jedi if he's just going to go turn rogue and turn into an assassin? I don't know.
Yeah. So this is an interesting point because, again, this happened twice. Mace Windu was like, look, like Anakin comes in, he's like, but a Jedi don't kill. And Mace Windu.
Yes.
Mace Windu says, Mace Windu. Okay. Okay.
That's a better name, frankly.
I'm just imagining spraying mace on a window and then just using a paper towel to just rub it in. So Mace Windu is like, dude, homeboy has all the power of the Senate, and it turns out he's a Sith, and there's no way we're going to be able to make this end unless we kill him, right? Which is pretty reasonable, but it does break all of the Jedi code. And then Obi-Wan is like, oh, it's almost like follow the rules until we don't like what you do. And then we're not going to follow the rules. Now, the interesting point here is if they actually had done this more often and made the Jedi Council actually appear more like wishy-washy kind of gray area than all good, then it would have been more believable to have seen Anakin's turn to the dark side, because what's the difference, right? Like,
right, exactly.
But they didn't do it consistently. They only did it twice at the very end of the last movie. No. Like,
because it was convenient for the story.
Yeah.
That's exactly why they did it.
That's why. Yeah, exactly right. That would have been such a better play.
Yeah, so ask your friends on that other podcast, what's the deal?
Yeah. First off, those guys aren't my friends.
What kind of order are these? They're your idols. Who are you kidding?
I've only listened. I've actually never even reached out to them. But I'm thinking about reaching out now because that made me so upset.
Well, you
that
have
they were,
to.
They were asking what were you expecting? And it's like a script, maybe a script that's okay, that's half decent. Like the very least.
How about a character that's not paper thin?
Yeah. How about a casting? How about not getting the Anakin casting wrong twice?
Like, yeah. How about not making the queen die of a broken heart? Come on. That's ridiculous.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, she died of a broken heart.
The robot comes out. We do not know what to say. She is perfectly healthy but has lost her will to live. Like, it's like I expected Obi-Wan to turn to that, like, whatever senator guy and be like, it appears she's dying of a broken heart. Like, or something, some cheesy line that it's like, it appears that beauty killed the beast.
Exactly.
Like, it's maybe the rare moment of restraint that George Lucas showed.
I feel like there was a line there, but they cut it.
So. Yeah. Like, the editor in one of the final shots of the movie is like, I'm cutting this and I don't care if I lose my job because this is the last of the movies. Like, oh, anyway, well, that is probably as like as much Revenge of the Sith as I can talk. We're going to get into the originals next, which is going to be so much easier to talk about. Probably less funny.
I can't wait for those. I actually can't wait for those because, like I said, I'm not a huge Star Wars fan. And yeah. I'd love to hear what some real passionate people have to say about them.
Yeah. Well, I'm in full passion mode because my guard is down. I am as vulnerable as ever. The Force Awakens could really let me down, but I'm expecting it to be great. So it is what it is. I'm repeating sins of the past, and it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, I expect it to be okay. So as long as it's okay, I'm going to be happy.
Can I tell you a funny story?
Sure.
I went to go see a
Please
movie.
Don't.
Actually, I'd prefer if you didn't. I went to see a movie this weekend. I saw the Dan Rather movie Truth with Robert Redford. Maybe I'll give my thoughts on that in a later pod because we're past an hour at this point, but you'll appreciate this story. I go up to buy my ticket for Truth and there's an older woman and a teenage woman. Okay. I know it's supposed to be teenage girl or I don't know. I'm going to call them both women because I don't know what I'm supposed to say.
Yeah. She could be 18. That makes her a woman.
Exactly. I don't know. But there is someone that is in their teens and then a woman that is is over 60 years old. Mm-hmm. They're both sitting behind the box office. There's no line. It's like a 10 o'clock showing, right? So it's not busy at all. So I go get my tickets. And as she's printing out my tickets, the woman is looking over at the Hateful Eight poster and turns to the girl and she's like, what's this one supposed to be about? And she's like, something about the Donner Party. And the girl says, she looks over and she goes, actually, yeah. And at this point, like, I've taken my tickets and I've turned my back to the conversation. And I'm starting to step away. And the girl goes, actually, yeah, it's actually, like she was very sure of herself. She's like, actually, yeah, it's a movie about what happened to the Donner Party before they, like, started eating each other. And I, like, stopped in my tracks. I was like, do I turn around and correct them? Like, I don't.
And it's better that you didn't.
No, I did. I did.
Oh no!
I turned around. I was like, actually, sorry. It's a Quentin Tarantino film. And Quentin Tarantino doesn't make movies about the Donner Party. And then I turned around and I walked back in. To watch my movie. That was a piece of
how was the movie?
You know, it was anti George W. Bush propaganda. So,
all right, I'm buying my tickets now.
The movie was. I'll talk about it on a future pod. I can't believe they made this movie. It's essentially a movie made by people that really screwed up a story badly. And they actually show how badly they screwed it up. But they did it in this vein of like, yeah, but our heart was in the right place because we were going after anything that would look George W. Bush look bad. And even though we trusted forged documents and did not do our due diligence and really botched this story, you can't be mad at us, though, because, look, we're all on the same team. We all wanted to make Bush look bad. Like, look, I'm personally not a fan of George W. Bush. I think he made a lot of really serious critical errors, which is an understatement. And like, you know, I don't think he did a lot of great things for this country personally, and I don't want to get political on this pod. But this movie was made showing complete journalistic negligence in the but yet the message was you can't be mad at these people for screwing this up because they were trying to make Bush look bad, and that's ultimately the right thing. And it was like, no, so, you guys did a terrible job. Like,
right. That actually sounds pretty interesting. I might actually want to check that out. So. It plays right into my biases. I cannot wait.
I was in there with one other couple, by the way. It's like a man and a woman. And Utah is a conservative state for the most part. Salt Lake City, more liberal. Rest of Utah, very conservative. I'm in this theater that's about like a half hour south of Salt Lake. And it's me. It's playing in one of the big theaters in the Megaplex, which is pretty amazing. I'm sitting in the very top row. About 20 minutes in, right when the moment where you realize that this is not going to be a pro-Bush, not a conservative viewpoint movie. It's right when it starts to yeah. set in. They both stand up, gather their things, put their coats on, and they're on their way. So then, then I'm alone in the theater because Lindsay wasn't feeling super well that night, so she'd gone to bed early, so I went and caught the flick. And so I'm by myself at the top, and I'm just having a blast talking out loud, just saying stuff, taking phone calls.
Like, you know, I wish – have you ever – okay, do you have the Periscope app by
any
chance?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah.
You should have periscoped during that.
That's a good idea.
While watching that movie. That would have been perfect.
What I want to do is carry around this microphone, this podcast microphone, in my bag. Because I bring in like my work bag for all the candy and soda and everything I bring in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so in my work bag, I want to bring in the – because if that happens again, and it doesn't happen often where I'm alone, especially the opening weekend of a movie where I'm alone – then I'm gonna bust out the thing and bust out the mic and actually do a live pod in the middle of the movie theater, like while the movie's playing, talk about it.
That's a great idea. I hope you do that.
Well,
during Star Wars
someday. All right. Well, let's wrap this up with a couple things. One was rest in peace to Grantland, one of those sites that I referenced earlier about my daily check sites. I look at Grantland every single day. Oh, I should say past tense. Looked at Grantland.com every single day.
What are you going to do
ESPN,
now?
ESPN, like the horrible monsters they are, have closed it down, and it is a travesty and a shame. And I'll be happy to follow those writers elsewhere, but it's quite a bummer.
So do you know if Simmons is actually going to start a new website, or are those writers going to do something else?
So Simmons took on four of the big writers. It was announced like a week mm-hmm. or two, maybe 2 weeks ago, that they were joining him at HBO. And I think they're actually going to be writers on his HBO TV show, whatever that thing is. We don't even know. He hasn't even announced yet if it's like some sort of talk show format, how they're going to do it, if it's gonna be like a daily show on sports type of thing. What? We don't know. I mean,
I hope it's like a Game of Thrones type of thing. But with the sports angle.
I hope he just does it in just completely nude. Just the entire show.
Well, it is HBO.
Just like HBO.
He can get away with that.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. but yeah, I don't know what's going to happen to a lot of those writers. While we're talking about sports, you know, you're from Los Angeles. You live in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. You're a big Los Angeles Lakers
fan. Spit
and they had a terrific game. They had a game against the Sacramento Kings, their arch rivals. And I'm a big NBA fan. I have an NBA League Pass account. I should say, courtesy of my friend Dustin Locke. Holler at you, Dustin. Thanks for that. Thanks for that login.
Share the wealth, Dustin. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, Dustin.
Because I'm getting tired of watching Laker games already.
You wouldn't mind on this recording if I just go ahead and shared your email and password.
Thanks, anyway. Dustin.
Look, the Lakers have a lot of championships. Okay, the Kings have one from 1951 when they were in Rochester. Zero in Sacramento. You guys were able to have the benefit of billions of dollars and the backing of the officials in 2002 and your run to the championship.
Mm-hmm. I fully embrace that.
A year that the Sacramento Kings had the best record in the NBA and were the better team. I was about to say clearly the better team, but not clearly. They were just the better team most of the time. But yet we lost in Game 7 in overtime. Thank you, Game 6 officials. So, yeah, did it feel good?
Was Donaghy one of the refs in that game, by the way?
Oh, of course he was. Of course he was. Of course he was. I think he refed every one of them. Good grief. But, yeah, did I take some satisfaction in seeing the Kings score 80 points on the Lakers, almost 80 points in the first half? Yeah, I did.
Oh, and 80 points in the paint, by the way, which was some sort of record. It was embarrassing.
Well, obviously the Lakers are not contending for a playoff spot. The Kings are not either, arguably, though. I feel like they have a puncher's shot at the eighth seed.
Well, you know, honestly, that eighth seed in the West is wide open. So you guys can get your act together, it could happen. It could happen. My hopes for the Lakers are, if we get 25 wins this year, I'll be doing backflips.
Oh my gosh,
we're that bad. We are that bad. It's embarrassing. It really is. I mean, I don't know. Man.
I mean, Lou Williams. So, yeah, what, was a nice pickup, and I think Julius Randle is going to develop into a nice player. I can't say the same for D'Angelo Russell so far, but it's way too early to make
it's
any
early.
Type of,
it's yeah, early. Yeah, it's early. It is. But, yeah. So, I mean, you know what? I love Kobe to death. I mean, he's my favorite player of all time.
You should, yeah.
And to see him over the first couple games just chucking up threes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's laughable.
He had 20
for the first time in my life. I'm saying, Kobe, stop, please get a hold of yourself.
He took 20 threes in the first two games. I think that's actually
I think it was. I think that's correct
because he did that in the Kings game. I was like,
I think he made one of them. So
I can't watch Kobe Bryant play basketball without a deep seated fear. You know, like when he touches the basketball, I fear what's going to happen. Like that's the reality of it.
That's what I loved about the guy. I mean, he was a killer. He was ice.
Totally.
Ice in his veins, ice water in his veins. And he just threw daggers, man. And that's what I love the guy. Killer instinct. The hardest working player, the most competitive player in the league. And,
I watched him score the 81 points against Toronto.
It was beautiful.
It was crazy.
It was a beautiful game.
Crazy. I don't know if the game itself was beautiful, but that was it.
No, but as a Laker fan, it sure was.
seeing Kobe throw up those threes in that game, at least the one against Sacramento, it was really bizarre because I felt myself feeling less and less fear as he was shooting. I was kind of like, go for it, Kobe. Go ahead. You're not feeling it tonight.
There's no reason to fear him at this point. I mean, here's the thing. He's going to get you 20 points, but it's going to take 25 shots to get there. So
on bad nights. I mean, he's going to have those nights where it's going to be vintage Kobe, but we'll see.
I sure hope.
What do you want?
That he's done trying to take over. So
do you want him to retire? Do you want him for two more years? What do you want?
You know, it's hard to say. I can be selfish and say that I want him to retire as a Laker, but if he wants anything past this year, some sort of extension, it's not worth it. Quite honestly, he's going to want 20 plus million and he's a terrible player. But he's still Kobe, so I don't know, man. I really don't know. The team is in shambles. I mean, I don't even know. I'll still watch the games, but my heart isn't in it, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like me and the 49ers. So there you go.
They're not good. So
Nope.
I honestly think this might be the last game that Kaepernick starts for you guys. So.
I hope so. But still better than Alex Smith.
Hey, he won today in London. So
yeah, that's true. Andy Reid, fellow BYU alum.
Woot woot, Andy.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing better than the other BYU alum, Steve Sarkisian. So, anyway,
he has a bit of a drinking problem. That
just a little bit, just a little bit. Anyway, hey, dude. Also, I wanted to mention one last thing before we do our closing here is everyone here, if you're on your computer, or finding your phone, whatever you're doing, I want you to visit www.dawnofthethread.com. We are now living in a post Halloween 2015, but that's okay. That doesn't mean you can't get great horror movie t-shirts from a great website at a very affordable cost. Dawnofthethread.com, sponsor of the Brave Little Podcast. Some dope horror movie
t-shirts. High qualities too.
Oh yeah, I'm sitting right next to me. I've got my Brave Little Podcast t-shirts, okay, and we will be running some promotions. Aaron can vouch that I'm holding them up in the webcam.
Those are beautiful.
So far, I've actually handed them out to the people who have guest hosted with me.
Hand them back?
No. Look, one of them, a coworker of mine, Jerem McDonald. Shout out to Jerem. We had a Halloween party at work on Friday, and he showed up as a brave little listener. That was his Halloween costume. Was a brave little listener. So he's wearing his
way
shirt
to go,
from,
Jerome.
From our friends at dawnofthethread.com. Jerome was wearing his brave little podcast t-shirt, and so that was fun to see. We will be running some promotions. Because I do want to ship out some of these t-shirts to some of the people that have expressed an interest in them. Because they're really awesome. Really high quality stuff. I mean, the t-shirt's super soft. Feels awesome. But I love scary movies. I've watched a ton of them. It's really cool to see some of the designs and like really kind of inventive, fun stuff. And some of them are just funny on dawnofthethread.com. So check it out. And the link will be in the show notes. But any other parting thoughts from you, my friend?
No, thanks for having me on. I honestly cannot wait for this next Star Wars movie, just to wash the taste of the prequels out of my mouth.
Oh,
so,
I know, right? Oh, man.
Yeah.
It
lingers.
It's like, I don't know if you've had this experience, but it's like going to Macy's and I am smelling 10 different colognes and they have to bring out the coffee beans, right, to cleanse mm-hmm. the palate. And I feel like The Force Awakens will be the best of coffee beans, cleansing of the palate for all of the Star Wars films to come, the rest of the trilogy, as well as these anthology films I'm quite excited about. I think Rogue One, the first one to come out, is going to be, I mean, the premise alone is like money. So I'm pretty pumped about it. But anyway.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a big Abrams fan, but I think that he was probably the right choice for this. So yeah, I'm pretty pumped for it. And I will have to buy my tickets eventually. Because I think that I'm going to try to see it opening weekend.
Well, you live in Los Angeles.
I know it's going to be a madhouse.
There's
but
a movie theater in every corner, so.
Oh, it's crazy. There's probably, within a 20-minute drive, there's at least 40 screens that I can see it at. So, yeah.
Lindsay and I might, in December, we might, there's $160 round trip tickets from Salt Lake to Long Beach. We might actually try to catch Disneyland for a couple days after they launch the Star Wars launch bay. So if we do that.
Yeah.
If we do that, I'll let you know, and let's let's meet up. So.
Oh yeah, for sure, without a doubt.
So, all right, well, that's it. As we say,
hold on to your butts.
I think my voice cracked a little bit.
We should do it again. Let's go. No, I'm just kidding.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts,
David. Why are you always so right? I like that.